Welcome back for more Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Sheila.
Okay, so you have decided to go back to that. It's no longer humiliating to be called Dr. Sheila. I offered you a perfectly nice compromise. But
oh, no. Oh, no. I meant to say Dr. Redman.
We'll get you there. I promise we'll get you there. Anyway, I'm here with Dr. Redman. And we are going to discuss more of The Inside. That's right. It's another Monday bonusode about episodes 106 and 107 of The Inside. As usual, we're going to recommend that you watch these episodes before you listen to this, because it's not going to make a ton of sense otherwise. And luckily, that's incredibly easy to do because it's available on YouTube. So either check out the link in our Podbean description of the video, or you can just go to YouTube, type in The Inside into the search bar, and you will find a playlist of this TV show. So that's episode 6, Point of Origin, and episode 7, Thief of Hearts.
Okay.
Let's go. All right, so, the upside to this, two episodes. At no point is Rebecca Locke kidnapped by anybody. They have broken that trend for two episodes in a row. At one point, she runs into a burning building. And I'm like, dear Rebecca Locke, you weigh 97 pounds. There are better people to be running into burning buildings. But that was my only comment this week. And then in the second episode, a little in the first episode and a lot in the second episode, they seem to understand that, oh, we've got a full cast. We don't need this show to just be about Rebecca. And I think that's kind of huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's really huge that they're like, no, the show's not just about one character.
Right.
I really appreciated that, and I thought, way to go, guys. You're doing a smart thing here. So there you go.
Yep.
So it was a very nice thing for them to do, and I think it's a step in the right direction for the show. Again, understanding that, no, it's not just her story. This is a big cast, and there's a lot of interesting stuff we could be doing with them. Hell, we get Adam Baldwin climbing into a helicopter.
Oh, it was good. It was
good. Wasn't that nice?
The whole two episodes. I mean, you said, after I finished the first one, I'm going, but I could do another hour of therapy. stuff here, you know? I mean, we can explain to people how this works.
Well, I think what's fascinating, about this episode, and I think I wouldn't be surprised if you agree with me on this one, is that it's an interesting thing because it's getting deeper into what Webb wants.
Yeah. And
that's what the entire episode is about. There is a mystery they solve this week, but the entire episode is really about, what does Webb want from Rebecca, and how is he going to get it? Like, that's the real issue going on here. And I found that fascinating.
Well, and I can say, I would argue that I was right, that he is very concerned with getting her to finally, she clearly, like I did, suffers from post-traumatic amnesia.
Yes.
Now, for different reasons.
Of course.
Okay.
Well, she murdered three people.
Yeah. So
that's the thing. All right, I guess we should just, in case you need a refresher, the synopsis is, a madman is burning down buildings around Los Angeles, and it's just generic, you know, scumbag, arsonist stuff. He doesn't feel like he can accomplish anything in his life, so he lashes out via fire. I mean, that's what arsonists are like. They feel underappreciated, so they're like, I can show you I'm capable of burning things down. Like,
yeah.
That's not really an accomplishment, but whatever.
I can get all the attention I need by burning things down.
And that's why it's almost always young men who do this. I mean, LA actually did with deal with a serial arsonist, which could have partially inspired this. And he was an arson investigator. Ray Liotta played him in a TV movie about it. And so there is the occasional guy who's doing it, like, who gets away with it for so long that, that he becomes just an integral part of the society while still committing burning fires. Here's a fun fact about that guy, which is the kind of number that blows you away when you hear it. Every year, every summer in Los Angeles, there'd be like 120 brush fires, you know, and people are just like, it gets dry, it's terrible, you know, it's just a bad situation and you got to deal with it. So this guy goes to jail, and the next year there's like 20 brush fires. And the year after that, there was just like 20 brush fires. And they're like, so seriously, every day on the way home from work, he was driving to a place where he knew it was dry and like throwing a little firebomb into some brush. He was creating a brush fire doing big damage every single day. Like, he also did major fires that burned down buildings, but like every day on the way home from work, he would do a brush fire just because it was part of his routine. Like, that's how bad these guys are. So yeah, I mean, I think it's an accurate description of the kind of mental state that creates arsonists, like the kind of people they are. But that's not what the episode's about, as we learn. Yeah. Like, they were not asked to cope with the case.
No.
He found out, Webb found out there was an arsonist, and he's like, perfect, I'll get Rebecca to do this, because my suspicion is she burned down a motel. Like, the day before, she showed up on her own doorstep, two days before, she showed up on her own doorstep. A transient motel burned down, killing three people, and his theory was she set that fire to escape. Yeah. And then ran away, and then ran home. And of course, and he's like, I can get her to reveal this by forcing her onto an arson case. And, I mean, it's a good plan.
Well, yeah, no, because, I mean, it's funny. It just goes to show what I said before, that a lot of his purpose is to get Rebecca healed.
Yeah.
Okay, because this is just part of the healing process. And the reason you know that is that at the end, I mean, he tells her just he's dead, forget it.
Yeah.
Now, it turns out he's not dead.
He's not dead, and they would have gotten back to that later.
Yeah, they would have gotten back to that later. But he says, because she lies to him, he knows that the reason she screamed when she was in the fire was that she saw the fire. Yep. And then she lies to him.
Yep.
Says he didn't. And so then when she gets another flashback, right? You know, then she can't lie anymore, really. And so, yeah, no, it's a very good episode from the point of view of,
well, the characters, the psychology of the characters, and the arc of what Webb wants to accomplish. And he's like, and I really believe he sees that this trauma has turned into the perfect person to analyze other people. And if he can just make her stable, then she will be the best ever at this job.
Yeah.
But it's a question of how is he going to make her stable? And it's
by putting her
into dangerous situations and forcing her to confront her demons.
Well, yeah, putting her into trigger situations that will force her to face the demons. And that's what I argued last time, was that some of the reason why she just keeps going into these stupid things and trying to do, you know.
Now, as you say, there are many layers to why she puts herself in these risky situations. Yeah.
But she didn't want.
Yeah.
Okay. But she didn't want to go into the fire. He made her.
He did make her. And that's the thing. It's like, because she's not willing to get conventional therapy, and because, you know, she's dealing with this really brutal stuff, I think that one was, going into the fire was too close to home for her. And she couldn't face it immediately.
Yeah. But she still, as I said, it's again, right? It's not like she remembered it.
Yeah.
She
that's
doesn't
true.
Know why she doesn't want to go into the fire. She just doesn't want to do the fire one.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like she is someone whose subconscious is right there.
Well, I think for most of us. I like one of the things that it did for me, I was watching this episode and I'm going, there's no question. I mean, this is, if you don't put yourself in those situations, if you have blocked memories, then the only way, somehow or another, and I don't know that that's always understood, but what you're trying to do is you have to remember, your brain says you have to remember, but you have created a massive resistance, a massive wall to against remembering. You don't consciously want to remember.
And I think famously that you will do a lot to keep that wall up.
You will do a lot to keep the wall up, but you also, at the same time, it's like we can call it your subconscious, whatever you want to call it. Those memories damn well are pushing you to the things that will trigger the memories, right? And that, I mean, one experience, I read a book called, oh Lord, it was about the Boston sex abuse scandal with priests. Honor your father, your fathers, right? I think is what it's called. Anyway, it's one of the reporters.
Right. One of the spotlight guys wrote a book about it.
Oh, anyway, yeah, he wrote one of the reports earlier on, long before Spotlight.
Oh, okay.
Okay, long before Spotlight, had nothing to do with it. He was on the case when they broke the whole thing, and so it's called Honor Your Fathers. Okay. And I can remember I started reading this, and I'm Colin Neville, my therapist, right? I'm in the Sioux by this time.
Yeah.
And I'm Colin Neville. And he says, well, why don't you just stop reading it? And I said, no, I said, I can't. I have to get through this because there was something in that book that made me understand. Like, it was like it broke something. I had to keep reading it. It was causing me all sorts of, I wasn't sleeping, right? And all sorts of anxiety, like, I mean, Rebecca's anxiety is tightly shifted, but it was causing me all sorts. And it was like 2-3 days. I probably talked to Neville twice during that period because I was reading these victim statements, right? It was just consistent, and it's a hell of a lot worse than anything you're going to see on Spotlight. You get close to it, as I said, in Ray Donovan. And because that's part of Boston where a lot of this occurred, right? And but what happens is that you, and I mean, that was conscious, but when I go back, like, how the hell did I ever end up in a Roman Catholic department, secular department of religious studies?
Well, in order to force yourself to deal with this stuff. I mean, this is, again, what we were talking about last week. And the way you get yourself into these situations. You push yourself into a way to face this, whether you mean to or not.
Yeah. And the hardest part is the emotional part, right?
Yeah.
Because because I have this intellect, I can intellectualize anything.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And, but still, right, there were places, and I would come to writer's blocks. And whenever I had a writer's block, it was because there were things I didn't want to face.
Yep.
Even though, supposedly, I was not writing about my situation. So let's get back to this episode.
Well, no, but it's relevant it's there, too. Webster, I mean,
it's what Webster is doing.
Yeah.
Is he's forcing got this her plan. Into trigger situations, like major trigger situations.
No, and essentially he's demanding that she reveal raw nerves so that he can address them, you know? And it's like, his feeling is you can only treat this stuff if it's out in the open.
Yeah, and this is why the next case doesn't really have Rebecca into it, because it's got nothing to do with her.
No, it's got nothing to do with her, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
It's so interesting, this episode, right?
Yeah.
But this episode, again, it's, I think, a really solid portrayal of, you know, just what these kinds of arsonists are like.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, he's a guy. He's never succeeded his life. He's just a failure at everything he does. He lives off of his mother. He's got no accomplishment. She dies, and he's like, he needs to, like, find a way to get the attention of this girl he's had a crush on forever. And it has, as they say, the opposite effect of, in fact, when he sets fire to her office, instead of, like, having some, and I mean, he does it, again, to feel powerful, but his conscious reason for doing it is so he'll have something to talk to her about.
Yeah.
But hilariously, she ends up meeting and getting engaged to a firefighter.
Firefighter.
It's pretty funny. I mean, it's pretty good, actually.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and so then of course he just escalates and it gets worse.
He gets worse and worse and worse until he's, you know, actively trying to kill people who he feels have disrespected him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
so,
then I think,
and what I like is they profile quite accurately that he needs the attention. And so all you have to do, and they're thinking, all we'll have to do is say that we've caught someone else, and he will either A, just come and demand the credit, or B, do a fire so obviously that we'll be able to catch him. And of course, the answer instead is no, he does both. He does a big fire and then he confesses.
He does a big fire, he confesses.
Yeah.
And then he's set two more, of course.
Yes. And then he sets himself on fire and then he's planning to burn the object of his affection. Because he's, again, a scumbag. An entitled scumbag. But,
well, I'm not sure he was an entitled scumbag. Well,
yeah, he feels like he deserves her love after accomplishing nothing. You know, after, like, he can barely talk to her and he feels like he is owed her love. Yeah, I think he's entitled.
Okay, yeah.
You know, I think that falls under toxic entitlement.
Okay, toxic entitlement. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. You know, like, he feels like he deserves her love based on nothing, based on the fact that he is attracted to her. He feels like she should be in love with him. Like, well, no, that's not how humans work, creep. But then again, he never had a chance to learn how humans work. I'm sure there's plenty of stuff in his backstory about why he's screwed up that we don't get into. But yeah, like, he's screwed up in a very traditional way for arsonists to be screwed up. And I think it's a very good depiction of that kind of psychosis. I think the actor does a really good job. I think the episode does a really good job. But as you pointed out, like, the key of this episode, like, the center of this episode is, well, what does this mean for Rebecca, and how is this part of Rebecca's journey?
Yeah.
And it's a very interesting as a result.
Yeah. It rises way above your usual, well, you know where you compare it to? You compare it to the Firestarter episode in Unsub.
Yes. Yeah. Where that was the same kind of thing, the Kevin Spacey episode.
No, that was different things.
Oh, you're right. No, that,
I'm
he was doing different
about
things.
The
yes,
last episode of
yes,
Unsub.
The final episode of Unsub. Well, not last. It was the last episode. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Firestarter episode.
It was the last episode. The little kid who
yeah,
was
the
setting
kid
these
who,
fires.
Oh,
right? God. Never kills anybody and then, you know, it has at least a happy ending.
Yeah, it was a strong episode.
Yeah.
But anyway,
when you compare it in terms of, like, it's not the same episode at all.
At all.
Except that it handles the issues well and
cases.
Like, and you have other things going on, and because in that you get personal revelation in Unsub, and in this you get personal revelation.
It's true.
And that to some extent is the focus of the episodes.
The beautiful thing about that episode of Unsub was it's like, I needed to do this because I believe in intervention. I believe, like, these guys are monsters, yeah, but they didn't start out monsters.
Because
and
I
if
was
we intervene, and if we intervene, we can fix this.
You know what's interesting, too, though, is that these, and I suspect that this show, had it continued, is far more honest about giving its people flaws.
Yeah.
Everything to me is, we're doing a Criminal Minds podcast, and everything to me is going, okay, this is all of these reasons that we've been complaining. There are so many things that we complain about on Criminal Minds that we don't complain about with the inside, like partly because it's more coherent. It's more consistent. There are puzzles to solve, but, you know.
Beyond that, I think it also comes into, like, there is this thing where, okay, and I want to say it's Knights of the Round Table again, because, you know, it's not really Knights of the Round Table, because, you know, read the Arthurian legends. Those are all pretty screwed up people.
Yeah.
Except for, I guess, Gawain. Whose, you know, story is about, whose main story is about what a great guy he was, but every single one of the Knights Around Table is a screwed up person with their own flaws that causes problems for themselves and others, right? And so, but by comparison, in Criminal Minds, by and large, once in a blue moon, right, we will get an episode devoted to one of these characters' problems, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But by and large, the show wants to treat them as if they are above reproach, that they are, you know, magical knights who ride in on a horse and solve people's problems, right? Yeah. And then leave town. And that's just what they are. Every now and then, we get a tiny glimpse, right, of their problems. But when we do that, it's an entire episode about the fact that they have a problem. Whereas here, it's layered in.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the understanding that these are real people with flaws is layered into every episode of The Inside. Yeah. And I think that's an important distinction because, well, I mean, who do we always say it about? Like, it's the Derek Morgan problem, right?
Yeah.
Where this is a man with serious emotional problems. And once every 2 years, they do an episode about his serious emotional problems. But week to week, day to day, he is allowed to just live as this toxic bully. And everyone makes a pass, gives him a pass. Because, you know, well, we know he's a great guy. Well, that's all well and good. He's not a great guy. He's causing problems for people. Yeah. Like, I know you like him. That doesn't mean he's a great person, and it doesn't mean he doesn't have problems he should be working on. But he's not working on his problems, and that's key to the understanding the show's Derek Morgan problem.
Yeah.
It's right there in it, where he's like, he's not working on his problems. Whereas here, these characters have problems, but the problems are not something they bring out for a special episode once every 2 years. Their problems are integral to who they are and how they see the world.
Yeah.
You know,
and
like...
And it admits that.
Well, no, and it's like, I don't know what background, like, I don't know what background stuff Adam Baldwin was told about his character, like, what the book on that character was, but he's got stuff going on.
Yeah, and you can see it, like, it's very subtle.
Yeah.
It's hardly there, but you know that there's something there.
Yeah.
And
I don't know what kind of abuse in his past that character is dealing with it, but it's there.
Yeah.
In the way he plays it. And I mean, it's there in a way that, I mean, we talk about how much great work Aaron, Thomas Gibson does as Aaron. And whenever he's called on to do great work, right? He's able to do it. But by and large, that is not layered into every episode, and it's not layered into how they write him and how he responds to situations. Fundamentally, he's just, you know, 99% of the time, he's just the boss who tells you which team member is going to which location. You know? And he makes great observations, and he's good at his job, but every now and then they let you into, oh, this is a really screwed up person, and he's doing this job for screwed up reasons, right?
Yeah, well, I think
only
in some ways,
special episodes.
Yeah, but the funny thing is that I think that the reason we like Hotch is because he manages to
bring it in more.
Bring it in more, like you get that sense. Mm-hmm. So, and I think he's doing it himself. He's creating his character.
He is in control of his character in ways that the other ones, I don't think, are.
Yeah.
I think the only one who's as close to in control of his character as he is Matt Gubler. And Matt Gubler, you know, is just, and it's fascinating because Matt Gubler is just as in the dark about who Reed is and what Reed's problem is as everyone who writes the show.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's funny. And the thing is, I don't know if I can peg it to, because, like, exactly what it was. But I think if we were to, you know, look at it overall, I think after they did the episode about the mob hitman who loves murder.
Yeah.
Right? And they reveal in that episode Aaron's backstory of, you know, horrible abuse.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if after that Thomas Gibson started taking it more seriously.
Yeah.
And like thinking about how this character would react to things. And he doesn't, I mean, you're right that there are frequently notes to that in the character, but even he, who's doing a better job than anybody else, doesn't always let you see that in his performance in a way that the characters on the inside are always letting you see the second layer down of their performance.
And the only thing that I would say, given everything that we've sort of learned about Thomas Gibson, I think that
he's delving on something real. Yeah.
Well, if he's not, no, it's not just that. It's that whenever he seems to have had a lot of problems being able to maintain his character control.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, that's
what
you're saying.
That's what got him fired. I was going to say
that the issue was, I was going to say that, like, the thing that motivated him to take control of the character is because Thomas Gibson probably has stuff in his own life that he relates to, but your point is that the fight that got him fired from the show was him not liking the way they were having his character act.
Yes.
Right? And what they were having his character say.
He wouldn't do that. And yeah. And he would argue that it needed only a small, tiny change.
Yeah.
And Virgil Williams wouldn't do it. And then he got mad. And
kicked Virgil Williams or whatever happened. I wasn't there. I don't know what happened. But.
And Erica finally got her dream to get rid of Thomas Gibson.
We've built up an interesting meta-narrative around this show that we don't have a ton of evidence for. Well, but it does feel true to what's happening behind the scenes, to the stories we've heard about behind the scenes.
Whenever you read about the show, you just, like, there's always something that kind of fits a meta-narrative about the show. Oh, it's been on long enough to have a meta-narrative.
Oh, absolutely.
And all I can say, and the only thing I will say about this show consistently is that, my God, Tim Minear knew what he was doing.
Oh, yeah. He knew exactly what he wanted.
Yeah. He knew what he wanted, and he probably gave these actors a clear vision of
what their backgrounds were. I'm sure he developed the characters with these people even before they started filming in a way that we know for a fact they didn't on Criminal Minds.
No way.
Although, I mean, there you kind of, I almost want to give them a pass because Criminal Minds is just shot to be a pilot, and you know you can't put that much emotion into a pilot, right? Because you know, because it might not get picked up. But the Inside was a different situation because Tim Minear wasn't guaranteed 13 episodes, but he was as close to being guaranteed 13 episodes as he can be without someone signing a contract, simply because of how much they wanted to do a show with Rachel Nichols.
Yeah.
The fact that they had already, that they had thrown away a pilot and then turned around and said, can you do another pilot with the same actress and title, Tim Minear?
Yeah.
And he was like, sure. I mean, to him, that must have been said, I could put anything on screen. I can put anything in this pilot and they're going to give me 13 episodes. And I'm sure he was right, but at the same time, he wanted to go that extra mile and, you know, make sure it was a show that was worth everyone's time. And he absolutely succeeded in that.
Yes.
He succeeded too well, because as we learned, the network was 100% not down with the kind of show he made.
Well, yeah. And anyway, we could go on about that.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Because it's a Fox problem. It's look at Action. Yep. I mean, we can give you numerous examples of Fox doing this. And
making the most interesting shows in the world and then burying them.
Yeah, and then burying them. Yeah. And it's
that was Fox's whole thing for years and years and years. And again, I don't know if someone's already written a book about it, but if they have, I would love to read it. Yeah. Because what was the war between development and programming and promotion over at Fox that led to this age of Fox over and over again, just making these incredible shows and then somebody buries them?
Yeah.
Although I will say, I love Action. Everybody should watch Action. I don't know. I mean, it's available on DVD in a way that The Inside isn't, but I don't know if it's streaming anywhere, which is sad. But Action, that one you kind of got to blame the writer, director, producer, like the guy who created the show.
Yeah.
Because he could have done that show. Like he was given the chance to do that show for less money at HBO.
HBO, yeah.
Yeah. and it might have starred, oh God, you know, young Orson Welles.
Oh, yeah, I know who you mean. I can never remember his name.
The other half of The Imposters. You know, The Imposters with Stanley Tucci and Oliver Platt? Oh, all I had to do was say the name of The Imposters, and I got him. Yeah, and it was going to be with Oliver Platt. And I think Jay Mohr did an incredible job.
Yeah.
Like, Jay Mohr's amazing in that show, and it's an amazing show, largely because of his performance, right?
Yeah.
And the thing is, HBO always wants to have a show about Hollywood on, or like the entertainment industry. Like, they always want at least one show on that's about, you know, sleazy people in the entertainment industry. Like, they had Arliss, and then they were going to have this, and then they did Entourage, now they're doing Ballers. Like, they always want to have something about the sleaziness of the entertainment industry. And they were going to, when they were going to cancel Arliss, they're like, we'll make Action. And then Fox said, we'll give you more money to make Action. And Action would have run for years on HBO, but instead it only lasted 10 episodes on Fox.
Yeah, anyway, we don't...
But anyway, we're just saying there's a lot of interesting stuff with this Fox at this period. It's a fascinating story.
It really is.
I would love to find out, like, the whole story of that at some point. But we're here to talk about The Inside. This show, as you've said, this episode is amazing, primarily and completely because of what a good job it does of showing the PTSD stuff with Rebecca.
Like, yeah.
It really is. And the dangers of that kind of therapy.
Well, yeah, except that, I mean, as I said, the problem is that sometimes some secrets are so hard to get to that it's the only way. Like, and that's the one thing that the team doesn't understand, and I don't blame them for not understanding, okay? Because what happens is, and I will go back, I had a real fight one time. I don't know if I told this story on the show already, but I had a real fight one time because there was this girl, and she had attended a workshop that she should have never been allowed to attend.
Okay.
And the workshop just sent her spiraling.
Oh.
Like, she should have, somehow or another, they let her in thinking, well, yeah, she's had therapy, and I'm sure she convinced them that she was fine. She had dealt with her issues, blah, 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 blah. It was about date rape.
Oh.
Anyway, and then of course, it just sent her spiraling. And so they were trying to blame the people who ran the workshop. And I was sitting there because I was part of the University of Ottawa committee, and it was the Carleton committee, and the problems were happening from the Carleton end of things. And her therapist was there. And then finally, after we listened to this girl, the victim, mm-hmm. Who was so upset because they were trying to get this whole thing shut down at Carleton, the therapist.
And
we listened to her. And then afterwards I said, and then finally I piped up and said, okay, there's a few things we need to discuss regarding finances and everything else. And I would respectfully request that, you know, whatever her name was, if she could just leave the room, she can come back in again afterwards. But I said, there are a few things we need to discuss that are internal to the committee as a whole.
Right.
Like, they weren't secret. I said, you know, exactly. But I'm not sure this.
You're looking, in a sense, you're looking for an excuse to make sure she doesn't have.
She doesn't hear this. Well, she doesn't hear what I was going to say, because then I proceeded to ask me why I am not loved. I tore a strip off her therapist.
Yeah.
I said, first of all, I said, you should have never allowed her to be in this workshop in the first place. I said, second of all, I said, if she has more trauma, it's because she needed to have more trauma and she hadn't settled any issues. And therefore, this is going to be, in the end, a positive experience if you handle it correctly.
Yeah.
If you get her to confront all of these issues that clearly she hadn't confronted, or she would not have fallen apart in this workshop. I said, I'm not saying the workshop people knew exactly what they were doing, and I don't think they did.
Well, they didn't have a full biography of everyone who was.
Well, no, it's not just that. I think that people, just like, okay, the team
Yeah.
The team gets, and Paul in particular, gets so mad at Webster because he's pushing her into these triggering situations. Webster knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
Okay. But Paul and the rest of the team, too, think that Webb is just this horrible person for doing this. And no, you've got to keep her away from all of this. And it's just the opposite. If you want to get to the past and if you want to get to the truth, you have to.
You have to have these triggering experiences, and then you have to deal with them afterwards.
But you have to have a therapist sitting at your elbow like I
during the whole time. Yeah.
I mean, I had this man, as I say in my blog, he was on speed dial. And yeah. Even after I left Ottawa, because I could go back to the Sioux and I could leave sort of Neville not being sort of like not only a phone call away, but like a 10-minute car ride away.
Yeah.
Right?
You still had him on speed dial.
I still had him on speed dial. I still had him in my phone. No, you cannot be forcing yourself into triggering situations. And at one point, and this was probably one of the stupidest things I ever did. Like, I did these things all on my own. Yeah. But as I said, I talked to him. At one point, he said, Sheila, he said, I was really worried we had finally lost you. And it was fascinating. I said, yeah, but if I had not gone down this road, I said, I never would have found out the true horror of what happened to me. And I won't talk about it. Like, I don't really talk.
It might come up later. We never know. But the point is, you're absolutely right.
We're going to go back to Criminal Minds. It ain't coming up. Trust me.
The point you make, I think, is a good one, which is like with being in this kind of triggering situation. And this is the problem with how good a therapist you need to be. And we'll get into in one second when I say it, Webster's own issues, because the thing is, you need a great therapist to be able to walk you through this thing, because the problem is, this kind of triggering incident can lead people to get well. This kind of triggering incident also frequently leads people to kill themselves.
Yeah.
And so you have to have a great therapist.
You know what it is?
To be able to do this.
It goes back to that episode where we complained about the kid who went off his meds because he wanted
and
to know what had happened.
Oh, God. And what a bad job Reed
it
does.
It was such a horrible therapist.
Yeah. That's and then terrible. Look, Reed is so bad at therapy that kid, Anton Yelchin, in a brilliant performance, tries to kill himself. I thought you were talking about that one.
No, I'm talking about the pharmacy episode.
Oh, the pharmacy episode. Sorry. Well, you said kid. So I thought you were going to the time that Reed was the worst therapist in the world.
Reed should never be allowed anywhere near a patient.
But you're right. No. Like the fact that he's you're talking about the one with, young Indiana Jones, where he went off his meds to try and figure out what happened to him as a child.
Yeah.
And his therapist, like, didn't have him put on observation while he was doing that.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, he didn't have a history of violence. He's been on friggin', mood stabilizers for 30 years. Of course he hasn't had any violent outbursts. Supervise this man.
What did you not? At least Webster knows that she has done something horrible, or she would never have
blocked it out
completely. That there is some horror in there that's beyond.
And as complimentary as we are being, and I think rightfully so, of Webb's ideas and the fact that I think he would have been able to help Rebecca, let us not overlook the fact that within that scene, he also says, those three people were probably not, their lives weren't worth, it's fine that you killed those three people and died. He's like, what kind of people are staying in a transient motel?
Well, their lives were not of value. No, that's not basically what he's saying.
He
said there would have been more than three.
Yes, there probably would have, had you not set the fire.
Had you not set the fire, there would be more than three. And it turns out, as we know,
it didn't matter. That there have been more. Well, no, he's not right, because the guy didn't die. The guy didn't die. She killed those three people, and the guy got away and has kept killing all these years.
She only killed two people.
No, there were three bodies. They just weren't able to identify who the three bodies were. This it just turns out saying. One of the... No, but oh. You're saying she only killed oh. two people. No, she right. did kill three
yeah,
people.
Yeah.
We just didn't... She didn't kill the right person within yeah. those three people.
Yeah.
Which is tragic. I mean, he got burned badly, but he's still out there. Yeah. And presumably has been killing people over the past 12 years or however yeah. long it's been. So that's a rough one too. No, it's quite a shocking ending to the episode.
Yeah,
it's quite is. A rough ending to the episode.
As I said, I can understand why yeah. they didn't want the episode anymore.
why they had to let this show go.
Well,
so let's move on to
no
our
guts, no glory is what I that's would true. Say. And they have no guts, so no glory.
Well, there's a reason Fox generally doesn't win a lot of Emmys. Yeah. They don't take the chances. So let's move on to our second episode, Thief of Hearts.
Oh, okay. They did this a hell of a lot better than that god-awful episode
on
Criminal Minds, the Devil's Gate. Like I said, boy, Criminal Minds, no, most of these authors just do not have a...
Just don't have a clue.
Don't have a clue and don't have an innovative bone in their friggin' bodies.
No.
Anyway, never mind. This one I thought when I'm watching it and I'm just going, you know, it's the filming that is so different. You just don't get, you know the horror that this man did.
Yep. But they cut around it.
But they cut around it. You don't have to, you don't see this. You don't have a little
they
kid
don't
involved.
Dwell
in
on
that.
It. Yeah, and they don't dwell on it. They don't revel in the gore the way Criminal Minds revels in the gore. It's in a way a much harder to watch show than Criminal Minds because the stuff it talks about is so real and the character stuff is so well done. But at the same time, as you say, it's a much less visually unpleasant show than Criminal Minds. And it's the same. And it's not like, well, it came on before Criminal Minds. TV was less gross then.
No,
it's the same year.
Yeah.
The year this aired, Criminal Minds started that fall.
Yeah. So that's not your excuse. With Unsub, you could argue that, but you can't argue that with...
Standards and practices were different in 1989 or wherever, whereas here, they weren't different.
No.
Like, no, it was a Fox show versus a... It was a Fox show versus a CBS show, and the CBS show is the much more unpleasant show to watch.
Oh, and it's... But
and that's
I not guess
that's
well
have... that's without even getting into the plot lines.
Yeah.
No, it's fascinating to me that it's like it's the much bleaker show, but it's also much classier. And beyond just not showing the gore, it is a show that is filmed with a certain amount of artistry.
Yes.
And you cannot say that Criminal Minds is filmed with any artistry whatsoever. No one can make that argument about Criminal Minds.
In generally
speaking. No, but I mean, I don't want to... my intention is not to insult the people who work on Criminal Minds, but rather simply to say that it is made largely by directors who, you know, want to get their pages and get home at the end of the day. You know, that's who makes the show. It is people who have, like, I got 8 pages to shoot today. I got 11 pages to shoot today. We don't want to get into overtime. Let's go home. You know? And it is edited by editors who just want to make sure that it visually... Oh, is it visually consistent? Does it look like all the other episodes? Great. Whereas this has more of that CSI visual flair thing.
That's what I was going to say. The one thing that I always say about CSI Miami is that it's beautiful.
It's a gorgeous show.
And
I mean, CSI looked looked good. CSI New York looked good. Yeah. CSI Miami is a beautiful show to watch.
Yeah.
They really put in the effort and the hours in that one. And this one, while not beautiful, likewise, they put in the hours in making this look good.
Yeah.
Of making the different, of like having a certain visual style to their office that is a different lighting scheme than the places they go to. And it's like, you look at Criminal Minds, every single day office they go to has the exact same interior lighting setup. You know,
it's probably the same
because it's all shot in the same stage with the same lights overhead.
Yeah.
You know, like that's just how it is. And that it's because, and I mean, I don't want to sound like the criticism, but it's because they've got 11 pages to shoot that day, and that's their only consideration. Are everyone's features visible? Yep. Okay, let's go. Is the lighting flat and even? Okay, let's go.
Yeah.
And that's the only consideration they put into it. And this episode is a perfectly good example because they managed to do a nice look on the flashbacks to make it distinct. Like everybody else, when you're doing flashbacks, oh, we'll just sepia tone it. We'll just wash out the colors a little. Here, no, they actually do something visually interesting with the flashbacks.
Yeah, the flashbacks are fascinating. Like, this is a fascinating episode dealing with wrongful conviction, dealing with, you know, like, and a serial killer and the Frank thing of, you know, like, he fell in love, so he's going to be different now.
I know.
And you just think, and all you can do is think about Frank and go, and Paul says that, yeah, one of these days, you're going to get the urge again. I mean, he doesn't put it that way. He doesn't put it like Mandy Patinkin puts it, but.
You haven't had the urge because you haven't been able to murder people because you've been in jail.
Jail.
Now that you're out, surrounded by temptation, you're going to do this again.
Yeah. You're going to do this again, and the first person you're going to do it to is the person you love.
Yep. Oh.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a rough episode. Paul's got his own stuff to worry about because this is the case that got him onto the team.
Yeah.
Looking into this guy, right? He was working the case, and Webster kind of want, as he said in his most honest moment, really, on the team, is like, it is useful for me at times to have a person on the team who is, you know, has a vibe of goodness and incorruptibility about him.
Yeah.
I don't value that. I don't value that at all. But it is occasionally useful for me to have that around. And that is why I keep you around. And I'm like, wow.
Whoa.
You're the best, Webb.
If anybody's honest on this show, it's Webster.
Yeah. Oh, it's fascinating. He's like 100% honest with Paul. He's like, nope. No, like, yeah, you're here because I can make use of you. Everyone is here because I can make use of them. I have a project. You know, I have a project. You are all tools that I use to build my project, but you're not more than that, which,
No, I mean, it is really rough. And you saw that right at the beginning.
Yeah.
It wasn't like it's not like
surprise or it's, you know, he hasn't been kind of open about this. It's like, what role can you serve in Webster's machine? And that is the role they serve.
Yeah.
Right? And Paul himself, the guy, the odd man out, is serving that role too. And so, yeah, this is showing that, no, it's not going to just be a show about Rebecca every week. She is barely in this episode.
Yeah.
It is entirely about Paul's journey.
Yeah. There's nothing in this episode that would trigger. That would trigger Rebecca. So, okay, she gets to do the work back home.
Yeah. And once again, as you pointed out last time, we see the hard work of being an FBI agent in both of these episodes.
Yeah.
In both times, there's a lot of grunt work being done. There's a lot of going through files. There's a lot of, you know, looking into people's history. Like, there's a ton of that stuff in these episodes. And it makes me really happy to watch because it's like, yeah. We're not naive about how hard it is to be an FBI agent, how much of it is just going through these files.
Drudge work.
The drudgery of being an FBI agent. This is one of the few shows that's willing to admit that that's a thing.
Yeah.
Like, no. It's mostly not sexy work. Yeah, they focus on the dramatic stuff, but they admit that the other work is happening. The only time they admit that the other work is happening on Criminal Minds is when we find out that Derek doesn't do his own paperwork.
Yeah. And that's why Hotch is in the office till all
the time.
Hours of the night.
He's doing everybody's paperwork for them.
So they can go home and have a good life.
Yeah, so they can go home and have lives. Oh, is there any wonder his wife left him? Wow. couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. But yeah, it's a very interesting episode. It is even by the standards of this show. it is horrifically bleak.
It is a horrible episode.
Because, we showed that Virgil is, he's happy to kill people if he thinks that, you know, they don't deserve to live. He's happy to justify the death of other people, right? If it's for a greater good. And now we see, okay, well, let's expand how far are you willing to go to get revenge. And oh my god, this episode. So yeah, basically a guy has been raping and murdering women and doing it and making a centerpiece of the rape and murder, taunting their husbands with the fact that they couldn't protect their wives.
Yeah.
And the problem is, one of the guys he did that to was in the military. And he has wholly bought into all of the ideas of what being a military man is. And, of course, the worst thing you could do to him is say he can't protect his wife. And as a consequence, he has made it his life's mission to get brutal personal revenge on the guy who killed his wife. And he's going to do that whatever it takes. And what it takes is doing a copycat crime so the guy gets out of jail so he's free to murder him.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, the first time I saw this, I was not expecting that. I mean, because they have such an obvious suspect.
Yeah.
And they have such a good suspect. Obviously, it's Ensign Roe. You know? Like, obviously.
Obviously.
Who else would it be?
We already know she's got issues. We've seen Star Trek.
She's a serial... Yeah, she's got issues. She's a serial killer groupie. Like this woman... She is so damaged and so screwed up, and she is completely blind to the fact that her fiancé is a monster.
Yeah.
And of course she'd be willing to do. Yeah, he did it.
Yeah.
And he's gonna, you know, it's like, of course he's this monster. He's horrifying, right? Yeah. And when we see the real him for 1 second in the episode, he gloats about his crimes.
Yeah.
And he's horrible, but she can't see that. You know, and that's the key part. Like, she just can't see that. And so she's not willing. And the thing is, on some level, like, you want to be hard on this character because, you know, she's a serial killer groupie who's trying to get a serial killer out of jail. But at the same time, honestly, she's got this problem where she can't believe that he did it.
Yeah.
She fundamentally can't believe, and she's blinded by her own psychoses. But she fundamentally can't believe that he committed this crime. She can't. She's projecting her previous relationship onto him. Right.
And about the only good thing that happened is that the soldier accidentally, I mean, he didn't mean to kill her, but he accidentally killed her.
Yeah.
And so she doesn't have to live because she has found out that he did it.
Yeah, she finds out that he did it.
That
it's
really
honestly, as you
guilty.
Say, that not only guilty, but is just a monster.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, the tragic thing, the only kindness in the episode is that she doesn't have to live with knowing that she really was, like, trying to save a monster.
Yeah.
Like, and that, oh, and that is a pretty low bar for a... When a lady gets killed rather than having to live with having set a monster free.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cold
problems.
Comfort.
Given her issues.
Yeah. Now, given her issues, how happy a life was she ever going to have, right?
Yeah.
Oh.
But I shouldn't kind of say it that way, but at the same time. And of course, it serves the purpose, in other words, for this soldier, in that he is going to. Because he's convinced himself in some stupid way, right? That he's changed, just like Frank did.
Yep.
And he is going to spend the rest of his life, in prison.
Yeah.
No,
well, actually,
she's dead.
Here's my question.
Yeah.
And this is a problem, and the episode doesn't acknowledge. I don't know that he is going back to jail.
Mm-mm. He admitted it.
But the problem is, he admitted it in such, and so the thing is, double jeopardy attaches, right? The problem is, he was released. Double jeopardy means you can't charge someone again.
For the same crime.
For the same crime. And he hasn't committed any new crimes. Now, the weird part is, if they had, in the episode, right, managed to set it up that he only got convicted for the one crime where they found the heart that Webb planted, right?
Well, that may be the only crime. So now they have to go solve the other crimes.
And but the problem is, the episode, in a way, frustratingly creates the impression that it wasn't the only crime he's committed for, because they have all of the other victims' family members testifying at the trial. Right. And that actually creates the impression that he was convicted for all of the crimes and is now just going to go scot-free.
Well, guess
now,
what?
Yeah.
I'm glad you found a flaw in the show.
Okay. I don't know why you'd be glad about it. But I'm saying the thing is, had they hadn't done that thing of just, you know, getting into the horribleness of all of the crimes. And I understand in Criminal Minds, like, this show normally doesn't wallow in the brutality of the crimes the way this episode does. But the episode actually has a reason to wallow in the brutality of the crimes, because they need you to get into the headspace of the army officer to understand why he did what he did.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the military guy did what he did, and so we have to experience all these people's pain. At first, it seems like it's just a Criminal Minds trademark. Oh, well, we're just wallowing in human misery to wallow in human misery. But no, we're wallowing in human misery to get you to the point where you get why this man did the most monstrous thing he possibly could.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So and there was a reason for it.
There was a reason for it. Other and that's than why this
exploitation.
Exactly. Whereas Criminal Minds, they wallow in this misery. There is an episode coming up not too far in the distant future where it's like they just show people, like, where they like, here, you should watch this video of your daughter being brutally tortured.
Yeah.
Why?
Why?
Why should he watch a video of his daughter being brutally tortured? And if for some reason he wants to see it, why should you help him do that?
Yeah.
No, it's because the show wants to revel in brutality. The show wants to revel in the awfulness of what's happening, right? It's because it's edgy and it's unpleasant. Well, it's like, no, this episode, the, you know, when this show went there, it's because it's important that you understand where this man was coming from.
Yeah. That he it's could do such a horrible, horrible thing.
Such a nightmarish thing. Well, I understand why how he was able to do this horrible thing. Because you walked me through what a monster was.
Yeah.
What this guy, what a monster this guy was. You walked me through every step of that. And you're like, I don't approve of his actions. We can approve of Webb shooting that man in the face. We can approve of her burning down a thing to burning down a hotel. Right? To escape from a monster who had been molesting her for 18 months. We can approve of Webb framing a man for the crime he committed.
Yeah.
What we can't, but we have to draw the line somewhere. And that line is this man killing an innocent woman to get a chance to exact personal vengeance on a guy. And that's, and this show has to go that brutal to show us that no, there are boundaries, there are limits, there are lines.
Yeah.
You're like, it's wrong that Paul goes to this man's house to shoot him in the head.
Yeah.
And by the way, I kind of love the way Rebecca and Paul independently come to the same conclusion, like both come to the same conclusion about what really happened.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's a really smart choice because, and this is key, right? Like, she is such an expert in these emotions, she's able to get there. Uh-huh. But Paul, because he feels it with what's going on with his own wife, is able to get there too. Because he asks myself, what would I be willing to do to avenge my wife if this happened?
Yeah.
And the answer is, there's nothing I wouldn't be willing to do. Okay, well, there's your answer about who the killer is.
Yeah.
Oh, it's such a smart episode.
Yeah, it's a horrible topic.
Horrible reason. Horrible topic. Brutal thing to watch, but it's a smart episode. And that's, I think, Maybe I'm crazy here. If you want to call me crazy, go ahead. I think it's okay to say that it's brutal for a reason.
Yeah.
You know? It gets brutal for a reason. Like, there is a narrative purpose to the awfulness of this episode that never happens on Criminal Minds. Like, Criminal Minds is voyeurism. This is telling a story for a reason. And I think that's the big difference. This show is causing us to be a lot harder on Criminal Minds, isn't it?
This is what I told you. I don't know how it's going to be, because everything we see, we're going to be comparing to this show.
Well, again, especially because friggin' Rebecca is on. It's a different character name, I know, but, you know, because this character and Rachel Nichols is going to be on Criminal Minds next year.
Yeah.
How can you not compare them? Like, you can't.
You can't.
God, we didn't even mention Paul's wife has a miscarriage this week.
Oh, that's just horrible. That's
and
so sad.
He understandably blames himself.
Well, yes, because
he was acting crazy and she went out to look for him and got into a car accident.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't answering his phone. Yeah. Because he thought, and again, it's the same kind of like
macho,
toxic masculinity. I'm going to do whatever it takes to protect my wife. I'm going to go and get this gun and go after this guy. And the problem is, like, that ended up getting his wife, you know, making her lose the baby and making her far more injured.
Yeah.
Like, his not communicating, his not working with the team, his not trusting them to figure it out, because the kicker is, they do figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, Rebecca figures it out.
Yeah.
Rebecca gets there in time. If he had trusted the team, if he had trusted Webb and Rebecca, we would have gotten to the same ending.
Yeah.
Right? Except his wife would be fine and his baby would be fine. And that is so horrific.
Yeah.
It's a tough episode.
Yeah. And then he is such a dick when he comes back to work.
Yeah, he is. He really, really is. And again, we get why he is. We understand where he's coming from. But Jesus Christ, Paul.
Yeah. And that gives it, because this is, I mean, that's the interesting thing, of course. He doesn't want to give Webb anything.
No.
Right? And so what happens, and that's why he's such a dick at the end, except that Webb, and you know, he says, no, you're not going to cover for me. You're not going to blah, 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 blah. And Webb just lays it out. Okay. Yeah. So either you're a private citizen and you're a vigilante and I'm going to slap the cuffs on you right now, or you're an FBI agent following
who's
orders.
Who's following
Figure
orders.
It out.
I know.
Figure it out. I covered
Oh, such
for
a
you.
Good scene.
Yeah. No, it was really, it was really a good scene.
And then,
to your point,
yeah,
that FBI agents never get charged with a crime. No.
Never, ever, ever.
Yeah.
And then Webb gets kicked from the unit for ordering Paul to do something so crazy. In direct, because he was specifically told by his commanding officer that Paul couldn't be on the case. So when he says, I ordered Paul to go and do it anyway, despite your orders, he gets pulled from the team. Spoiler alert, that's not going to stick.
Well, of course not. Of course it's not going to stick.
But it's just worth, it is nice that they did that with the characters. I thought it was a really nice touch.
No, I think that they handled it so it's the old story, right? They just they seem to handle this so much better. All of these different conflicts and all of these problematic things that people do. And it turns out that Webster, for all of his horribleness that it appears to be, will still protect his team.
Yeah. He'll always look out for his team.
Yeah. And that's...
fundamentally, I'm not saying he's a fanatic. I'm saying he's a guy who, beyond where most people would be willing to go, he trusts that his project has value. And as we've seen before, like, there's a reason for him to think that they get results.
Yeah.
They do. Like, that's why the LAPD is happy to have him come consult on
an arson. Right?
An arson case. Because they're the violent crimes, like, task force. They get results. You know, when it's all said and done, he gets results and he has reason to believe that his project is of value. And he, as you say, he even protects Paul. He protects the team. He trusts that Paul serves a purpose. He protects him just like he'd protect everybody else.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's very interesting. Good ending. Great episode. And I mean, we haven't had a bad episode yet.
No.
Like, that's the thing about this show. There hasn't been a bad episode, and we're 7 episodes in. There hasn't even, I mean, I'm not saying every episode is full on great, you know? Two of them have just been very good.
Yeah.
I would say that Old Wounds and Point of Origin are just very good hours of television rather than great hours of television. But in the first 5 episodes, there have been, like, 2 very good hours of television and 5 great episodes of television.
Well, we're still running an A.
Oh, God.
It's still getting an A.
And in a really nice touch, we flash back to Paul 3 years ago. Because it's 2001, I think. Okay. Yeah. No, it's 2002 and this is 2005. So yeah, 3 years ago. And we get to meet the team's original profiler. She's only there for a second, but we get to meet the team's original profiler.
Yep.
And it made me really happy. Just like a little note. And you know what it made me think of?
What?
How they're never able to get Mandy Patinkin back for the flashbacks.
Yeah.
Like, just made me think about how they can never manage to do that. Come on, guys. Figure it out. You know?
Well,
I'm sure there's some amount of money you could give him that he would come back for a flashback, right? Or maybe not, you know? Maybe he really does hate it that much.
Well, you know, I mean...
it wouldn't
given,
be, yeah.
Given our analysis of the show so far...
maybe he's justified in feeling that way about it. All right. So that has been another week of The Inside. We have, I gotta say, there's a lot of good stuff to look at. And next week... we are going to be back for episodes 8 and 9. Can you check the titles for me? Because I didn't check them myself.
Okay, I will check the titles for you. Just a minute.
I appreciate that to no end.
I have
to. While she's doing that, I just want to remind everybody, I said at the beginning of the episode, I'll say it again at the end, go to YouTube. The Podbean description of this episode has a link. Go to YouTube and type The Inside into the search bar, and you'll also get the episodes. This show is so much easier to find than I thought it was going to be, and I'm very happy that not only do we get to discuss it, but we get to share it with everyone.
Yeah.
Because I think everyone deserves a chance to watch this show. So that's where you can find it. And your homework for next week, if you're watching along, is episodes 8 and 9, which are titled...
Declawed and
okay.
Aiden.
All right. I remember one of those, so I'm looking forward to being completely surprised by the other one. So yeah, join us back here for episodes 8 and 9 next week. Now, until then, I just want to remind you that if you want to reach out to give us your thoughts on The Inside, we'd love to hear them. Questions, suggestions for other... suggestions for other profiling related fiction we should check out in the future. We'd love to hear all of that. You can reach out and touch us at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. So until next week, remember, regular episode of Profiling Criminal Minds this Thursday. You can hear us talking about season 6. I'm sure we're going to be very mean about it. We're in a weird split time state where you are both hearing. You can right now listen to us talk about The Inside and then immediately go and hear us talk about what it's like after our full experience rewatching The Inside. So, like, I don't even know. You, the person listening to this right now, knows more about what we feel about season 6 than we do, which is kind of strange. But I think it was a good way to handle this. So yeah, this Thursday, new episode of Profiling Criminal Minds. And of course, back here next Monday for episodes 8 and 9 of The Inside. So until then, I just want to thank you for listening. Remind you to rate it on whatever app you use. Give us a rating on the app you use. Apparently, it's important that you give us a rating. We'd appreciate a high one, but apparently any rating helps because it just means people are engaged and that's all the apps care about. I didn't know that until recently, but apparently, yeah, it doesn't actually matter what you rate. They just want people to click the rating buttons. algorithms.
Which is why you get so many horrible things showing up.
Yeah, because people hate watch them, and then, you know, it recommends, oh, well, you probably also want to hate watch this thing. I mean, I hope you're not hate listening to us, but, you know, apparently engagement is what matters, so I can't, you know, get fussy about it. All right, so we'll see you back here then, but until then, au revoir.
And good night.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.